Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen, listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 276, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Thank you so much for joining us. As always, always appreciate all the fan support, all the listeners. Of course, follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. See, listen, this week I am really excited about interviewing this one of the hottest names in independence, on the independent scene for the past, I'd say, six to eight months or so. I mean, he's had his time in major promotions, one major promotion in particular, and we'll talk about it. But the past few months, I tell you, man, this guy has been really, really turning some heads in the positive direction, really making his name known in the independent scene. Without further ado, I'm really excited to introduce to the show tonight, Mr. Keith Lee. How are you tonight, sir?
I am rather fantastic, and I'd like to say I'm happy to make episode 276, if you will, limitless.
Absolutely. Oh, man, my pleasure, my pleasure. So let's rewind a little bit. I always like to ask this question to my guests, especially for someone like you who is the quintessential linebacker who can just flatten people. What made you decide to go professional wrestling?
You could say that it was kind of a ingrained thing from a young boy. My grandmother loved wrestling, and her love kind of transcended into me. Mm-hmm. And I guess really I've always wanted to. I was a athlete, and in my family, football was everything. But by the time I was a freshman in college, the decision to pursue wrestling was very strong, and that was just a decision I made at that time.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's fantastic. So you come from a big Texas background, so there's a lot of names who we know in the pro wrestling industry who have a Texas pedigree. Out of all the Texas wrestlers, now there's a long list of them. Who would you say who's your favorite and most inspirational?
So that's the thing. When it comes to inspiration, there's never been a wrestler in particular that has been that. Mm-hmm. My grandmother is and was my inspiration. She's the reason that I chose to wrestle. She's the reason that I give as much that as I do to it. Now, if we want to talk about someone that taught me some great things, then we're probably talking about Undertaker, to be honest.
Yeah.
I've only met him a couple of times and briefly, but he's given me some great advice. And in terms of motivating me, I would say that he's been the most inspirational in that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd give that to him.
Yeah, that's a fantastic choice for sure. What are some pointers that he gave you?
Just as far as learning to make things matter, make who I am mean something, make the things that I do mean something, and make myself an entity that people want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm standing there, whether I'm talking, whether I'm doing a maneuver of some sort, people want to stop and see what Keith Lee is going to do. And that's something that I think that I've applied into my style and the way I present myself and things of that sort. So it's been very useful information for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been in a business for about 11 and a half years now. Who gave you your break? Like, what was the first promotion that you stepped foot into?
So I started with a promotion in Arlington, Texas called Professional Championship Wrestling. And I wrestled there for about a year before I started wrestling in further north Texas, in Denton, for XCW. And I really just kind of bumbled around Texas for a long time. I did a little stuff in some of the southern states, but what I would consider my break was probably in 2016 when I decided to go to the East Coast. And my very first match with Beyond Wrestling was against Donovan Dijak. And that match and that debut, within 48 hours, changed my entire wrestling life and experience. So I consider and credit Beyond Wrestling with what I would consider the big break, if you will.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I've had Dijak on the show before, and he gives a ton of credit to Beyond Wrestling as well. You guys have had some really, really awesome matches over the past couple of years. Probably say so year and a half. I recently had a really, really amazing match that had a bunch of people talking. You also had an opportunity because of just your Beyond Wrestling and just you're really devoting your time into the business. You got an opportunity to compete for Ring of Honor. How did that come about?
Actually, Ring of Honor came about before Beyond Wrestling. I started wrestling for Ring of Honor in 2015. And that opportunity actually came about because of a match I had in 2014. I had just come back from injury. My first match back was against Raymond Rowe. And after our match, he essentially demanded that I come and meet people at Ring of Honor the next time they were in San Antonio, Texas. And so I did that. And then once I met people and whatnot, they invited me and gave me an opportunity in May of 2015, and that's when they put me and Shane Taylor together in Amarillo, Texas, and Oklahoma City. So that was the beginning of Ring of Honor. But even then, I was just doing like dark matches and things of that sort. So there was no real break with Ring of Honor. The break literally, like my wrestling, traveling and opportunities and things of that sort came after I debuted at Beyond. And
yeah.
Ring of Honor was just a great opportunity to learn, and I did a lot of that there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, certainly. Being with Shane Taylor and having a few with War Machine, you guys had some – I saw a bunch of the matches, and they were some hard hitters for sure. Did you pair with Shane beforehand? VIP, right? You teamed with Shane. Is that how you got back with Shane and Ring of Honor? How did they decide to bring you and Shane together.
No, not at all. Shane and I only knew each other because of Raymond Rowe. The most experience Shane and I had was Shane's in locker rooms. I've never really been a tag team wrestler. The reason that we started tagging at VIP was because we were tagging at Ring of Honor.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's not the opposite. Nothing that you see, if you saw it in Ring of Honor, that's where it came from. Nothing before Ring of Honor was ever done.
See, I really didn't have much time to have such a chemistry, so to speak. It was basically on the job training as far as a tag team when we saw you at Ring of Honor.
Oh, there's no basically. That's 100% what it was.
Yeah.
But, the thing that I wasn't concerned with that because, Shane's a hungry guy just like myself.
Uh-huh.
And he's itching to get opportunities and prove himself as well. And, it made things easier with that because we always wanted to be better than we were in the match before. And we got to learn from guys like, the Briscoes and Christopher Daniels and Kazarian, a lot of guys that offered a lot of good insight, and we learned very fast, which helped us be very efficient.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. And so you were at Ring of Honor for a bit of time. We don't see your Ring of Honor no more. Is there a reason why?
Yes. I made a decision. So my last show with Ring of Honor was February 3rd when me and Shane faced the Briscoes in San Antonio. And that's because I made the decision to sign with Evolve with WWN. And it took a lot of consideration. If you notice, I didn't sign until like almost the end of January with WWN. That was a decision I made. I was thinking and mulling over since December because Ring of Honor offered a contract, and I wasn't completely content with it, and I had questions that didn't get answered. So I waited and wanted to try and get answers to my questions. And in the meantime of waiting for those answers, Evolve then offered a contract as well. And it just took some time to sit and think and talking with Shane and talking with some mentors and friends and family and whatnot before I made a decision. And in the end, that decision was to Evolve, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, and of course we saw we're seeing now with Evolve and just other promotions that you're with, is just that, and you mentioned Beyond Wrestling, and of course your affiliation with Evolve and WWN, those are just opportunities that have just really soared, just the popularity and just increased your stock exponentially. Do we see a WWE appearance anytime soon?
Honestly, I think if that was something I could talk about, it's probably something I would have shared by now. I can't say, whether there is or isn't. If something comes up, obviously, a smart person is going to look at that opportunity and see, if it's something they want to do or should do.
Yeah.
If something happens, I'm going to look at it and we'll see. But for now, my focus is on the things that are in front of me and trying to create more opportunities, I'm enjoying my travel into Europe and getting opportunities at some of those promotions there. And I still want to wrestle in Japan, so
nice, yeah.
We'll just have to see how it goes.
Huh. So Keith Lee, so out of the stables in New Japan, so I guess the biggest stables that you have now, you still have of course Bullet Club, you have Chaos, you have Suzuki Goon, and you have Taguchi Japan, which just debuted this year after Wrestle Kingdom. Which stable do you see yourself fitting in the best?
You know, In all honesty, I wouldn't even limit myself to just New Japan because I've never been to Japan to wrestle, period.
Mm-hmm.
I would wrestle anywhere that had opportunity that made sense. Let's put that out there right now.
Yeah, certainly.
For all the
promoters listening right now.
Yeah. I would never want to limit myself in my opportunities. But,
because you're limitless, right?
Absolutely. You've got it.
That's your nickname.
If I had to pick one of those stables, there's a lot of guys I like in the Bullet Club and I respect and I kind of admire. But I think that if I was going to pick one, it would probably be Chaos. I really like it.
Yeah. So Keith Lee from Chaos against Bad Luck Fale from Bullet Club. Oof, man. It sure would, absolutely. So I guess my last question comes to the level of athleticism that you have compared to your size. I mean, you have almost a 300-pound guy doing all types of aerial moves. What made you choose that line of a moveset? Of course, that has... that has really been the talk of the town, just your type of wrestling choice. Cody actually said something about it recently that I wrote an article about, I transcribed an interview on behalf of the site that I write for, and he put you over quite a bit. And what made you decide, I mean, you have an Ahmed Johnson mixed with a Vader type of feel and look to you, but you choose the route of Rey Mysterio and Jushin Thunder Liger. How did that come about?
Well, honestly, I have a great variety in my style and the things that I do in the ring. It's not just cruiserweight stuff.
Yeah, you got some wicked pop-up power bombs, by the way.
Well, I mean, honestly, the things that I do are often adaptive to who I'm wrestling.
Yeah.
So I do enjoy being an athlete, so that's part of what inspired that. But the thing that caused me to choose to do the things I do was because of a conversation with Dusty Rhodes and a conversation with William Regal that inspired me to be myself. Everybody else wanted a big man that wrestles out of me. And it just didn't feel good to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the variety, the versatility, that is naturally me. That's what I've always been. In any sport that I've played, I've been able to do multiple things, take care of multiple jobs, and play multiple positions. So, to me, it only felt right in wrestling for me to display that and that be something that I exude in the ring because that's who I am. And
yeah.
So being me is what has helped me. It's what has caused this explosion in wrestling. And people appreciate it and they embrace it. And then it feels good because that's just me being me. So it's a special thing.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your favorite match in WrestleMania 34 is in New Orleans? Who do you want to face? So it's a two-part question. What's your favorite match you've done so far, and who would be your WrestleMania 34 opponent?
Oh, man, that first question is very difficult. I've had some absolute zingers in terms of matches. I've had two really good ones with Matt Riddle recently.
Yeah.
And I've had two really good ones with JT Dunn. I had good ones with Brian Cage, Michael Elgin. I had a really good one with Moose for Pro Wrestling Revolver recently. But if I had to pick one, it's probably my AAW match from the Thursday night special, me versus Donovan Dijak.
Yeah.
And that match was a mixture of power and agility and let's kill each other. it was brutal, man. I think we were both feeling that for probably a couple of weeks just from that match.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult to start the weekend out that Thursday with that match and then have to wrestle three other matches that week. So, but the match itself was crazy. It was beautiful. It was chaotic. It was everything you want in a match, just a mixture of great things.
Yeah.
In terms of WrestleMania I don't know, man. It's hard to predict the future that far. I mean, who knows who's going to even be available at that time, right? So if I had to just pick a random person, not necessarily random, but if I just had my pick of the litter, I would probably pick a Kenny Omega or a Okada.
Ooh.
I'm pretty sure that those would be a couple guys that would definitely be top of my list of people to get in the ring with and mix it up.
I love it. That would be more of a Wrestle Kingdom match. That would be fantastic. Out of the WWE roster, who would you want to face at WrestleMania 34?
Ooh, that's easy. And there's actually a few options there. And the easy ones would probably be Samoa Joe, Brock Lesnar. Or if active, my number one match that I want, and it's still my number one dream match, would be Kurt Angle.
Ah, yeah, fantastic. And with the aerial moves, with the power moves, you know, he's had some wonderful matches against Brock Lesnar and the Big Show, and he knows mm-hmm. how to really put people over who are bigger than he is, so that would be fantastic. Let the listeners know where to find you and some upcoming dates.
Let's see, we're in the middle of July here. The 15th, I'll be at AAW. I actually have a heavyweight title match against Sami Callihan. That should be quite interesting. I think people will be very happy to know that I'll be returning to XWA in Jersey on the 16th. And that's going to be against Jeff Cobb, and people tend to love that match, so that should be a good one. After that, I got a few days, and I go back to Europe, and my first match back is against Daisuke Sekimoto for XWA UK.
Mm.
And I am super looking forward to that. But other than that, I've got matches in the UK against Bull James, Big Grizzly. Then I have, actually don't, Fight Club. I don't know who I'm wrestling there. And then I'm wrestling a guy named Siren for RPW on the 29th as well. So that's pretty much the majority of my July.
Awesome.
It'll be very busy with lots of flying.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can we find you on social media?
So the easiest way, I tend to keep it pretty streamlined so it's easy to find. Both Instagram and Twitter are at Real Keith Lee altogether. For those who don't know how to spell Keith, it's E-I-T-H, not K-I-E. I know English sucks sometimes. K-E-I-T-H. And Facebook.com/Real Keith Lee is also an easy way to get to me on Facebook. You can just search Keith Lee, find this probably a shirtless picture of me of some sort. And then if you're looking for some pretty cool shirts and hats and whatnot, you can find Bask in My Glory gear on bottomlinemerch.com/Keith Lee.
Fantastic. It's been a pleasure, Keith. Best wishes to you, man.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me. It was a great conversation.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a good night.
You too, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show with Keith Lee. And ladies and gentlemen, we have just went live as well on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. So submit your thoughts and questions and your reactions to WWE Great Balls of Fire and Raw and SmackDown Live and all that good stuff as well. Lots and lots of fun, ladies and gentlemen, and we are continuing to give you what you want to hear in the world of professional wrestling, ladies and gentlemen. 276 episodes, live and in living color, getting funky like a monkey, if you will. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring on the co-host with the most. Without further ado, Under the Mat Radio's Evan Tech Proud. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm good, man. How you feeling?
I'm doing fantastic. We got a lot to talk about tonight. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I can't wait to. I know it's a lot of stuff to cover.
Absolutely. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. Alberto, man, Alberto, Eltron, and Paige.
Oh man,
how about that? I don't know what's going on with them two. Just a lot of craziness, and they need a touch from the Lord, Evan.
Yeah, he do, man.
He
need to be at the altar.
Yeah, absolutely. And without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'm really excited to bring on Crave Wrestling staff member, one of the pioneer co-hosts of the Pancakes Power Slam Show. As Eric Bischoff's theme song would say, he's back and better than ever. Without further ado, Ryan Kikwa, how are you today, sir?
Hey, what's going on, Chris? Doing well. Been a while. Happy to be back as usual. New dad, so just put the boy to bed. He's only 9 weeks old, so yeah.
Man. Congratulations.
A little bit of free time. Yeah, thank you, thank you. Yeah.
Ricky Dad.
And a lot's changed for me too, man. I gotta tell you, man. The big dog, it's his yard, he's won me over. Like ever since WrestleMania, I hate to say it. Like, he's up there with Styles and Nakamura for me. I know I just cost you some listeners, but man, he is up there for me.
Man,
wow,
that just blessed my life. I loved it.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, that is fantastic, man. That is great to hear.
All the way.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so what caused the conversion?
I honestly, it was kind of the bullying of Reigns, man. It just showed me, it's just like, why are we doing this? Here we have this guy in The Undertaker who I have never met any wrestling fan who didn't like or respect The Undertaker. And The Undertaker gave Reigns his stamp of approval at his show, the biggest show, WrestleMania, and people still can't get down with it. I don't know. I see the star power in the guy. I see it now. I don't know, man. Something happened. I see it.
Ah, man. You know,
it's there. I the war cry. I love it.
You know, Ryan, we are celebrating our 16th year of friendship this year.
Yes, absolutely.
And I tell you, man, we've been through a lot together, but I think this may be one of the top moments of our friendship.
Was it Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor? They don't have nothing.
Yeah,
we're
best
the real
friends,
best
right?
Friends. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. I love it. Absolutely. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on Alberto El Patron and Paige, man? They were at an argument at an airport in Orlando. There's been so much back and forth with them as a relationship. I mean, there's been so much, and even now it's not even, it's terrible. I don't understand why.
Very toxic.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. I mean,
almost seems like drug behavior.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing.
Seriously.
I mean, they're both notorious for being hotheads in the first place. I mean, I don't know how they expect it for their relationship to be smooth sailing. I really, really don't understand the how that was going to happen. I don't see this going on any much longer. I mean, it'd probably be best for them, you know. And it's funny because Paige sent a tweet after that talking about, we're fine, leave me alone. I'm like, okay, so why would you tweet that? You have a million followers.
Yeah.
And you're telling people on Twitter to leave you alone. How oxymoronic is that?
It's insane, man. like I said, it seems like drug behavior. Del Rio, what was the thing? Wasn't he already married or separated? Separated is a term. You're still married. If you get married, you can go buy yourself a divorce or whatnot.
Right.
I'm married now, so I get it, and I take marriage to the heart, so
yes.
I get it.
Yes.
But that whole situation is just a hot mess that WWE should just release her, let her go back across the pond, go home, and just kind of grow up, you know. She's definitely got some growing up to do. And Del Rio, the dude's what, 40-something, 40? Mm. So he is
41,
who he is. He's just
going to
be that way. So,
yeah.
There's no saving him.
No. Yeah, exactly. See.
there's really
not, like you said, there's really not much saving him. The thing is, Paige, you know, grew up in the business, you know, and there's just so much work to do, you know, with Paige. And I just really, like you said, I really think she needs some growing up. It just seems like the only thing that's really, with Paige right now, it just seems like the only thing that's really saving her I think she's doing something with the Rock or something to that nature, as far as being in that movie with the Rock or something to that nature, I think the Rock is making a movie for like her family, you know, in honor of her family. So I just, you know, I just really don't understand the purpose of it. It just seems like when that's over. And then I don't even think she's being on the Total Divas or Total Bellas this year or in the next season. I don't think she's going to get re-upped. So at the end of the day, it's just,
is she suspended or she's just injured, right? It's just the neck?
Yeah, she's injured.
So I'm guessing she's still getting a paycheck from them?
Yeah. She's still getting a paycheck.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I mean, at the end of the day, it's just really a matter of time of, you know, when she's gone. And I think it's best for that. Speaking of gone, Austin Aries, A Double. One of the best theme songs in the entire WWE. I mean, he was relegated to the cruiserweight division. I think that was a good thing. I think he would have been lost in the shuffle if he would have been in the heavyweight division. But, you know, he was quote unquote relegated to the X division. He really was one of the people who made it important, who just really kind of elevated it. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, with Aries, it's kind of tough because, you know, he's kind of been known as a hothead backstage, according to reports. I don't know the guy personally. I actually have had Thea Trinidad, his fiance, on the show. She's a very cool person. But as far as Aries is concerned, I've heard some things as far as just his backstage. He's not the most he's not the most cordial person backstage. And there was also some animosity of not being happy with being on just in the cruiserweight division. He lost the crew. I mean, he had his chance at WrestleMania to become a cruiserweight champion. I think that was probably his biggest opportunity. Didn't capitalize on it. They didn't book him to win the title, unfortunately. Because of that, and he went some time off from injury. It just seemed like there was a bunch of different things capitalized, stacked against each other, and Aries is gone. And Meltzer said this weekend on a podcast, he said that he most likely will go to GFW. That's probably where he would see. I mean, he was the first ever 2-time ROH champion. He did a fantastic job in ROH. But with the talent, the level of talent now, it'll be kind of tough for Aries to gel in there. I remember when he came back for a little bit when he left TNA. He didn't fit in as much as he did years back when he was champ. GFW is a pretty good fit because they gave him a good run for a little bit. Then he kind of was off and on, did the whole Dirty Heels tag team with Bobby Roode, and was still back and forth. Option C. So I think GFW, you know, may be a good fit for him, but WWE's no longer.
I think Aries should have had Bobby Roode's spot in NXT. Hindsight's 2020, but I would have much rather taken Aries as NXT champ right now than Bobby Roode, and that's no disrespect to Bobby Roode. I'd just rather have Bobby Roode on Raw or SmackDown. Because there's just something there. Bobby Roode as NXT champ just doesn't feel right to me.
Really?
It's not glorious. I don't know what it is. I think it's just NXT. It's just I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. You know, I've always liked even in Impact I like Bobby Roode, and I wasn't the biggest Impact fan. So I don't know. I would have rathered him stayed in NXT and helped that brand out some more. And just Roode, I think, should have been a Raw or SmackDown guy.
Yeah. See, with Roode, I think they're doing a good job with Roode. The only thing with – I can see what you're saying with Aries. When Aries was in NXT, I think that they used him decently. You know, he made the turn and was feuding. Well, he still was feuding with Corbin in the beginning when he was babyface, and then he made the turn, and then, you know, they teased the feud with Kenta. Goodness, Hideo Itami.
You know, yeah,
trying
yeah.
to figure out his NXT name. And then they just kind of pushed him up and. The Cruiserweight division was a good deal when he got injured, and then, you know, the orbital injury, and then when they turned around and made him a color guy, I think that was a great idea, too. I think he was, you know, the whole banana and things like that. He was kept saying package, and I think that was a breath of fresh air for the Cruiserweight division. The Cruiserweight division is just... It's on life support for me. I tried with 205 Live for a few weeks, but I mean, I still look at the updates, but I mean, it's on life support for me.
That time slot. I mean, I know it's on demand, but that time slot does not help it at all.
No,
and they're
doesn't.
Just not. If you look at that tournament, go back and look at those tournament matches and look at what they're doing now. You just see that Vince McMahon stamp all over 205.
Exactly. Man, like I always say, man, 205 Prime is what it needs to be. I just put it on the network, put it right before NXT, and 205 Prime. I mean, I think because the Cruiserweight Classic had so much NXT, it was right it had that NXT spot on Wednesdays. And then had that WWE Network spot, and I think that really helped it. But now it's just, I mean, like I said before, that's exactly
that
what it had, that full sale crowd to it.
Yeah,
who was engaged more, and it made the fans, it made the viewers engaged more. Now you have, like I said this before, you have someone who comes to a SmackDown show and has 2 hours of SmackDown programming, and then you're telling me that after 2 hours of SmackDown, you want me to watch a bunch of Cruiserweights to go at it that has hardly any type of angle, you know? And it's like, I just watched AJ Styles and John Cena go against Kevin Owens and Rusev. And that goes, and then you're telling me that you want me to watch, I mean, no disrespect to Cedric Alexander, great guy, I've had him on the show, but you want me to go from that high to Cedric Alexander versus Noam Dar? Where does that, how does that work out?
Yeah.
Makes no sense at all. Yeah, it's to me, it's just, it's to the point where they need to pull the plug on that as far as being on, you know, the, as far as being on the main roster.
And I mean, in the history, are cruiserweights really, yeah, you got guys that are, but are they known for their personalities?
No.
Yeah, some of them, maybe a few, but they're known for their moves.
Right.
And that,
yep.
I mean, you just seen the segment with Kendrick and Gentleman Jack, and you're just like,
yeah.
Give me
whip
matches,
him with the umbrella.
Give me flips, dive.
Yeah,
give me dive.
Yeah, dive, exactly. Hashtag dive. Exactly. And next we have Ryback, your boy Ryback. Not happy at WWE mentioning him on WWE Ride Along, which was probably the funniest ride along I saw. It was just utterly ridiculously. It was hilarious, the one with Jericho and Kevin Owens before the breakup. Oh man, that was just absolutely hilarious. And so they were, Jericho mentioned, somehow they were talking about strength, and Jericho was mentioning the apple and how Mark Henry just can crush the apple and with one hand. And they were talking about how Ryback tried to do it during a segment, and he couldn't do it. And then he said that it was the glove. And then Jericho was like, just take the glove off. And he's like, no, Ryback doesn't take off his gloves, you know? And it's like, man, you just couldn't do it. And then I listened to the podcast that Ryback was Ryback had talking about that. And he was just talking about how he just he mentioned something like he was spending time crushing apples that day or something crazy like that. It's like, you know, I don't know Ryback personally, so I can't make a personal, you know, opinion on him, but just, you know, from what I hear and what people tell me, and just the podcast, it, you know, he has this positive thing, but he has a public perception of being so bitter, you know, and it's like, man, I mean, if you're about this Feed Me More team positivity, I mean, the bitter jabs that you have is just crazy to me. And, you know, hey, WWE mentioned you after such an acrimonious relationship. You were still mentioned on Ride Along. So what is that? I mean, how is that? You couldn't break an apple, man. I mean, there's really nothing bad to say about that you couldn't break the apple.
Yeah. And for a guy who was only WWE and was in that system for,
right,
what, 10 years, you know, like, and still never got to that point, true, the Shield kind of scooped his heat, if you will, but I don't know. For a guy that was in that system, solely that system for that long, he sure does have all the answers on this podcast.
He sure does, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, I do my best to listen to Ryback's podcast, man. I mean, you really need some...
YouTube really, snippets. I can take them about 2-3
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I write a lot of my pieces based on the YouTube snippets because, I mean, 2 hours straight of Ryback's podcast, I mean, you get an F-bomb every 3 seconds, and I'm just like, oh, man, tone it down, man. It's like,
yeah.
I'm trying to dissect what you're saying, but you just keep shooting me with F-darts. But yeah, it's, and you know, and the funny thing about it is I went on Ryback's account to just try to add something to the piece I wrote previously about this, and Ryback has deleted me from his Twitter. How about that? Yeah. So that's a badge of honor for me. I had no, you know, the funny thing is I've never, ever communicated with Ryback. I've never tweeted Ryback, to my knowledge. I've never sent Ryback maybe an email. Maybe I sent them an email to come on my show, perhaps. But, yeah, I mean, never any type of two-way communication with Ryback. I just don't just randomly tweet him or derogatory tweets or anything like that. But, yeah, I mean, obviously he knows me enough to block me. So, you know, round of, I'll be like Vince Russo.
And today,
do the round of applause on that one.
Today, in today's day and age of social media hate, that means you won. Getting blocked. That's what it is now. That's why if somebody says something to me on social media, I just no sell them. I don't block them. I just don't reply. I'm just like, if I block you, then you'll screen cap it and tweet it. Oh, look, he blocked me. I win. I made him run.
You know, I'm talking about Krabic. Dropping F-bombs, being bitter. Because he's getting mentioned. I'm sorry. I apologize, guys. I had to take care of the family matter. But, he's a little overrated to me.
Yeah. I just hope that, one day, you know, Ryback, he gets to the point where everything is well in his world. And, people feed him more. I mean, that's what it's all about. And as soon as people feed him more, you know, he's good to go. Speaking of big man, Bobby Lashley. So there was a report from PW Insider recently that American Top Team, his training group, they were thinking – and they were actually kind of pushing Lashley to take a hike on wrestling altogether and focus on MMA. Now, Lashley's he'll be 41 next week, so he's winding down his career altogether. I mean, he's 15-2 in MMA. That's quite impressive. But this is probably his best years in pro wrestling with being a heel on Impact the past two, 3 years. It's definitely been some of the best, probably the best years of his pro wrestling career because I've talked about this before with Gail Kim. There's not a lot of people who actually can say that being in Impact Wrestling actually assisted them in their career more than being in WWE. And Lashley can certainly say he can certainly say that.
Yeah.
And so that you know, that's a plus for Lashley. He, you know, of course he lost at Slammiversary to El Patron. despite being a hothead and despite being investigated for domestic battery on Paige, he's the number one representative for GFW right now. I guess that's a very I guess that makes perfect
that's
sense.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that makes
that's
perfect
wonderful.
Sense. But yeah, so you know, but here's the thing, Lashley, he really doesn't have much to prove. I mean, going back to WWE just for the sake of it, that really won't do anything. I mean, a Royal Rumble appearance that may work. Evan, what are your thoughts on Bobby Lashley potentially leaving WWE and going MMA? Do you think it's a good call, or do you think MMA going to MMA is a good call? Or do you think he should stay pro wrestling until he retires?
I mean, I spoke to Lashley before. Nice guy. He's the young old. 41 is young. In the world of athletics and sports, 41 is old. I mean, you're 30, 31 year old. He's 41, so he's like getting up there with the seniors. But I will keep doing both. He has a successful MMA career, so he can continue to have MMA matches. Like you said, a global force now, Anthem Isle, whatever you want to call them. OWL. They've helped them out a lot. And, you know, I keep trying Japan. ROH, I would just keep smoking wrestling and MMA until I can't go anymore. He's the most, and no disrespect to last year, he's like the most generic, bland, like he's like a dollar store wrestler. You go to the Dollar Tree, a dollar store, and you look at those generic wrestling men, and he's the generic black wrestler doll. Because he's just a muscle guy with his features are just bland. And nothing against him, he's just a wrestler. He has no features that stand out. That's why he wears the little headband. Nice guy. He's super athletic and super talented, but he needs something. But like I said, I would just keep going. Hey, he could be next. Try to sign up to face Mayweather. Go to UFC. Doing the WWE. I would say, and I called this months ago, and Brian Featherstone will tell you, I said months ago, Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil, because they're black and bald headed, they're going to put them together. And they got them together. Oh, so maybe last year you can come to WWE, and it can be the three black bald headed roster guys, be the Raisinets, because they like doing that. So maybe they can make that the new three main team. It could be Lashley, Apollo Crews, and Titus O'Neil, and it can be the New Day.
Wow.
The bad thing is, I can't fight that. I can't.
Yeah.
There's no disagreeing with it. Just look at the history book.
Yeah. That's the sad part, too. Like you said, look at the history books. Exactly. If Lashley came back, I don't see it. I mean, I don't see exactly where he would be in the WWE right now.
SmackDown.
I really don't. SmackDown? Yeah. Even if he was on SmackDown,
Because you need personality to be on Raw. Everybody on Raw has some kind of personality, some kind of charisma. SmackDown, you do need it, but if you just wrestle, you can still get away with it some. NXT will be a downgrade. So you got to put him on SmackDown. You put Lashley on Raw. I mean, Apollo Crews, he's over because of Titus O'Neil. I mean, Darren Young's another black wrestler with no charisma. What's he doing? Nothing. Disappeared. Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, no charisma. Well, Bo Dallas does have potential, but WWE just don't want to book him like they could. So he's sticking with committees. So I'll say put him on SmackDown.
Ryan, is he going Raw or SmackDown?
I got to agree with Evan here. I would think SmackDown.
I say NXT. I wouldn't even.
I wouldn't even
do it. No, yeah.
You know what?
Worth it
you know
me.
What? That's. Hey, you know, and like you said, by the stone, it could be the reverse of NXT. I guess you can call it the second generation, a third generation NXT. NXT do need star power with, you know, just having Bobby Roode there and a few others.
Exactly.
Because last year, you go the way of star power and add people to want to watch NXT. Not to see people don't watch NXT, but they add more star power to NXT. So, So bring back Shotgun Saturday United, Jack.
Lashley's claim to fame for me was actually 10 years ago this month when he lost to Cena at the, I believe they were doing the Great American Bash. I know it was July. And I was just thinking, I was like, all right, this is Lashley's shot. We might get a black WWE champ, and I was just buying in totally. Cena hits that super AA off the top rope, and I said, nope. That was when I officially had just was done with Cena until about, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
It's funny because me and my buddies, I think until Featherstone, this is at Mania, we called him Chocolate Brock. because right when Brock left, everything last he did was like Brock. He did the same same ring taunt,
same jump,
same pyro.
Yeah.
He did the Dominator, which he almost broke people. He was basically like the black. He was Chocolate Brock. That's what he was.
And nobody talks about him. He was the representative for the daggone president, and people don't even, I mean, that's a pop culture thing, and they don't really talk about that. You hear about Umaga before Lashley.
And Lashley had a good match against Batista on SmackDown at one time. That's the only two number of matches he had. Him and Cena, him and Batista.
Yeah, the Cena match with Batista. I think the last one was actually pretty good. The heel Batista match was pretty good. Was that Mania or was that SummerSlam that they went against? They went against each other.
Mania, I think it was.
Mania and SummerSlam, wasn't it? Wasn't it both?
Yeah, it was Mania and SummerSlam because I think then Batista get hurt after the match. He blamed Cena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was in the wheelchair.
Yeah, that match was good.
The wheelchair with the spotlight. Yeah, that was a good Batista run. Yeah. The spotlight Batista was probably one of the best ones. That worked very well. And then he came back and he became Blue Tista. So that didn't work out too well. Speaking about changing their look, Bayley was on the Austin podcast recently, and she was talking about just her look. She was explaining how she's bland, you know, basically just there's a blandness to her character right now, and basically, you know, it's gotten to the point where, I mean, people just are kind of booing her because she's not really playing the same type of character anymore. She's kind of playing. I don't even know what she's doing right now, because when she was NXT, she was kind of like the super fan. Now she's not the super fan anymore, and she doesn't really have a character. I mean, the whole ponytail thing, when she went over, it didn't translate hardly at all. I mean, I still like Bayley, but it didn't really translate that strongly when she went to Raw, and it kind of, you know, when they built her kind of to WrestleMania, it kind of worked because Charlotte was such a good heel. Because Charlotte was a strong heel, it helped Bayley, but Bayley, you know, she's been under the radar. And when she was on the Austin podcast, she was talking about how she's still strongly considering changing her look. She may put her hair down. She may change her gear. She also pitched a heel turn she was talking about how she was thinking about pitching a heel turn to creative, and she had it all decked out. She was ready to do it. She had it all written out. And she went to, and this is like cute but sad at the same time. She said right before she was going to pitch the heel turn, she saw like some huge Bayley fans, and they were crying because they were so happy to see her. And because of that, she was like, oh, no, I'm not going to do it. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, Austin, you know, Austin kind of got on her about that. Like, yes.
What has happened? This is professional wrestling. Yes,
exactly.
Who cares about the kids' feelings?
Exactly.
I hope the kids are mad. That means they're entertained.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, they should have emotions. Like, what are we doing here? Like, okay, I understand. She sees some upset kids. You feel a certain way, but at the end of the day, you got to think, all right, when those kids get older, they're going to say, oh, my gosh, I was really into that Bayley character.
Yeah.
She was so good, she made me cry.
Just like the Miz girl.
If
I used to hate Regal when I was in middle school and high school.
Right.
Yeah.
When I got older, I'm like, man, Regal's the god. I love him.
Yeah.
But he got so much heat from me when I was younger. Like, what?
Exactly.
I don't know, man. It's entertainment. If you don't cry, laugh, get scared.
When the Miz won, when the Miz won and that girl's face, you know, the picture, they still show that face. And when that bitter face, you know, 10 years from now, she can say, hey, that was me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because of that, now WWE focuses on crowd reactions again. Something that my good buddy Jake the Snake showed me when he was good 4 years ago. He was doing an event with him, and he was like, "Oh, you see that? You see that? They don't do that anymore." I've been like, "What? They don't play into the crowd. They don't show the emotion."
Oh, you gotta do Jake better than that, brother.
So he was right.
That's the reaction that you need to do.
Yeah. You want 21? I got 22.
Do you trust me?
But,
you 22,
yes.
Jake said that's something they stop doing, just showing the emotion of the crowd. Of course, the Savage segment, he gave the Savage equal best, the Snake best Savage. And because of the Miz girl, now you see, we just saw a group on the side. Every time there's a big event or there's a big swerve or angle, someone wins, WWE always gets to that. They always got to find that kid to that audience where you get the shot face. But Bailey, first of all, Bailey needs to grow a top lip. Her face looks weird. And please give her a heel turn. She's all about hugs. Give her the Mr. Yuck symbol. They can do a total 180. And maybe give it to Mr. Yuck where she's grumpy, she does something. Because, I mean, she's talented, but it's, like you said, hugging and huggies and, you know, big hugger. Right now with Stale, she don't have a strong heel she can work with.
Yeah.
It's like the same four kids is going to cry, the same kids is going to pay money to see you get beat. When you get older and become adults, they'll love you. So people got mad at Hogan when you turned. They got mad at Rude. They'll appreciate it. And that fans. They'll be all right. They'll get over it. Even David won't pay money to see you win, to pay money to see you get beat up.
Yep.
There was a time when Bayley was in NXT at the height of her popularity and was super babyface that I said, oh, let it play out. She can do this for another 5 years. And I thought she could have a heel turn as big as a Hollywood Hawk at the time, you know, because she was such this loved baby face. And I was like, she could turn on somebody and catch you out of nowhere and be like when Hawk turned. But, man, we're so far from that now, two, three years later.
Yeah, sadly. I want to get another opinion for this Bailey thing. Like I said, we're talking about right now. We're live on Crave Wrestling Facebook page, of course, Blog Talk Radio. We're live. We've got another person in the building. Pancakes and Power Slams, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. Without further ado, from Forbes Magazine, feature columnist for Bleacher Report, Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham. How are you tonight, sir? And let us know your thoughts on Bailey telling Steve Austin that she was wanted to be heel, but she saw someone earlier on a episode of Raw. They were crying because they loved her so much, and then she was like, "Oh no, I can't do it. I'm not going to turn heel anymore."
Big Nasty.
Yeah, it's so great to be here, guys. Thank you so much. First and foremost, I want to apologize. The fact that I ran for Forbes is a reason that I was just writing because there's so much going on that I completely spaced coming on here because I've been looking forward to it ever since you invited me last week. So thank you for having me on the show. That's a crazy story that Bailey wanted to turn heel, or at least was considering it. The fact that she was really kind of speaks to how terribly she's been booked. The fact that she would even consider turning heel at this point in her career, where really I think by now she should be entrenched as easily the top star of the women's division. But it's just it's so horrible how she's been mismanaged that she just came in within months. She won the world title. At WrestleMania, she had the title, and nobody really cared about that match. They didn't book her as a simple underdog as they did in NXT, and as a result, it didn't work. So, you know, Bayley is just a character that's lost right now, and I think it's unfortunate because, I mean, I would have bet my everything that there's no way anybody could screw up this Bayley character, especially a company like WWE that's been doing it for so long, and right now she's lost.
Yeah. There ain't no stopping us now. We celebrate on the floor.
Oh, gosh. It's like Bonnie. She's like another Bonnie. She is TBS kid.
Yeah, she loves you.
Baby and friends.
Great big family. Yeah, great big hug. Yeah, sad to say. But
she
needs
to give Del Rio a hug.
Yeah, she does. She needs to give Del Rio and Paige a big, great big hug, a big bear hug. Although that no longer in existence. So real quick, let's have a really real quick discussion about this. So we were talking about the top three. I wrote a piece as far as because Hogan tweeted July 7th. It was the 21st year of the NWO. Bash of the Beast, July 7th, 1996. 21 years ago is when it all became so much different, and Hogan pulled the best heel turn ever on Randy Savage, the leg drop heard around the world. We'll start with Evan. I wrote a piece about, you know, who else could have been the third man. And Hulk Hogan was, without a doubt, Hulk Hogan was the best choice. You know, there have been talks over the years of that Sting was the guy, he was the choice. I don't think Sting would have worked because, like, when they tried to turn him at 99, I think it was like Fall Brawl 99.
Yeah.
They tried to turn him on Hogan. He whacked him, you know, on the leg or just on the back. Or I think he was like he poked him with the bat, like in the stomach or something like that. And Sting is such an amazing babyface, a consistently over babyface, that turn in WCW lasted literally like 2-3 weeks. Like, people did not want to see, you know, he had that seek and destroy.
Yeah,
I think it was like Metallica or something like that. He had that music. That music was kind of cool, though. But,
it
was different than the Crow, you know, Sting character, and it was just a different feel. And people just was like, I'm not really buying the Sting heel turn. So out of, you know, three other people, just random names that you can think, the top people other than Hogan that could have been the third guy and it would have worked. Evan, who are your top three?
Jack Tunney. No, I'm just joking around.
President Jack Tunney.
like I said, one Sting, but I mean, you know, Sting's go for me and you each other's now.
Yeah.
Gosh, this is tough. Michaels, if Shawn would have turned, that would have been huge. And remember, it was the New World Organization. That was the first time. It was the New World Order. It was the New World Organization, brother. Then it was the Order. But Michaels, Taker, if he can. I mean, like you said, if it wasn't Sting, I mean, you can't count Flair. If it wasn't Sting, who, like you said, wouldn't have been an impact, the Hogan, the only way it would have worked is if it had to be somebody from WWE or F that would have jumped. And the only two people I can't even think of a third guy would have to be Taker or Michaels. They're the only other two guys that had the big enough name that either way they could turn. Everybody's like, wow. I mean, I'm listening to Ben, and Bischoff, you know, been on my show over 3 times, and he confirmed that Sting was the one because they didn't know Hogan was going to turn until that night, to the last second, the way Hogan walked out, and he got there late. So I can't think of three. Like I said, but HBK and Taker are the only two I can think of.
Evan, who are your
HBK.
Ultimate? No, you're good.
I agree with HBK. I think Bret Hart, from a mouthpiece standpoint, would have been good because he was very angry at that time.
Still is.
He still is. But yeah, he definitely could have cut some wild promos. I gotta go with Evan, man. It's kind of hard on a third, man. Like for me, Michaels or Bret. I'm sitting here looking at the PWI 500 from '96, and I can't really. I'm not really seeing anybody that jumps out at me like mouthpiece wise.
Yeah, interesting. Alfred, who are your three alternates?
That's definitely a great question. I'm with you guys in the fact, especially Evan, how he said that it would have worked best with somebody who made their name in WWE. That's why I do think that a Shawn Michaels appearance would have been great. Or even within that match, I like Randy Savage or Sting turning. And looking back on how that match was booked, like if I would have been watching that match knowing what I do now about pro wrestling as a seasoned veteran, I would have guessed that Luger was going to come back and turn. But like if you're going to turn somebody
right.
back,
yes.
If you remember, he early on, which would be smart to turn him because then he's not fighting these guys and then joining them. Then he it's like he fakes his injury and comes back later and then turns. You can do that with Sting or Macho Man Randy Savage as a means of turning them, and I think that would have been just as effective.
Yeah, I think that's very, very interesting point. So my three, here's what I got for my three. Number three, I have the Undertaker. Only because I think it would have been just out of the park surprise of all surprises. I think that really would have worked, just as far as shock value. Cause I mean, you really couldn't get much more of a shock value than Hogan. So it's a really difficult question, you know, when you think about the comparison to Hulk Hogan. Taker would have had it. The only thing is I would have had a different mouthpiece because Taker on the mic, you know, in the NWO every week. That just, you know, Taker being someone who's always on the mic just wouldn't work. I don't like that. But it would have brought some shock value. Number two I have is Shawn Michaels, just because, I mean, that. It would have made perfect sense because that's the Click right there. So the Click basically coming to the WCW, you know, as an NWO perspective, would have been really interesting. Michaels being, you know, kind of like the mouthpiece of the NWO in the early 2000s, that was terrible to me. That didn't work because it was just so tainted. And my number one. I think this, you know what? I think this is this gets a drum roll just because I think I really would have liked this. So this is a drum roll. My number one is Jake Roberts.
I really think
that Jake Roberts would have been a fantastic NWO. Yeah, you won 21. I give you 22. You know, that was unfortunate, man. That was the worst pay per view of all time. I actually wrote a piece about that. I actually interviewed one of the promoters,
was it worse than 1994?
No, that was the Legends of Wrestling or whatever. Heroes of Wrestling.
I know what that was. Yeah, I know what that was. That's
what
the top five
worst. Yeah, the Heroes of Wrestling was probably the worst pay per view of all time. I mean that pay per view was horrible. They were just throwing people together. I think they had a match with Tully Blanchard against Stan Lane. You know, it was just nasty.
Talking about Big Nasty. That
pay-per-view was Big Nasty. Yeah, and that was 99. I think it was 99. or 2000.
Yeah.
I think it was, yeah, I think it was 2000. And Yokozuna was like 700
October.
Pounds.
He was October 10th, 1999.
99, yeah. What you said? What'd you say, Alfred?
I was saying, I remember I watched that back about a year ago, and I remember seeing Yokozuna, and he could barely stand on the apron. He was like,
yeah,
he was struggling to stand on the apron.
Yeah, that was really
sad. It made Super Clash 3 look like Mania 13.
Like Mania 17. Yeah, Super Clash 3 was quite awful, too. Yeah, that's certainly up there as well. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to our flavor of the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, so we're going to bring back the, after SummerSlam, I think we're going to bring back the one-off paper. We may bring back the one-off pay-per-views again. The past three weeks, we've been talking about just one-off pay-per-views that just grading the matches and just overall thoughts of just one-off pay-per-views. We did this Tuesday in Texas, and then we did what did we do after that?
We did
Capital Punishment first, and then we did this Tuesday in Texas, and then we did the Bash last week. Marty Elias was on the show, and he actually refereed the Bash, and so it was great to have a perspective. This for the next 6 weeks, we're gonna do SummerSlam. We're gonna grade SummerSlams. This week we're gonna do 88-92, and we're gonna give us just the grade, overall grade of each year. We'll start with 88. We have the British Bulldogs beat the fastest Russo brothers. It was a time limit draw. There was no winner there. Bad News Brown, the king of the Ghetto Blaster, defeated Kim Sarah. Rick Rude defeated DQ. Powers of Pain defeated the Bolsheviks. Ultimate Warrior defeated the Honky Tonky Man. The 30-second match wins the Intercontinental Championship. Crowd goes wild. Dino Bravo defeating Don Morocco. Demolition retaining their tag team championships against the Hart Foundation. The Big Boss Man defeating Coco Beware. Jake Roberts, you want 21, I'll give you 22. he defeats Hercules. And then the Mega Powers defeating the Megabucks with Jesse Ventura as a special referee, Gorilla. Let's start with Evan. What do you grade this pay-per-view?
I give it about a B minus. It was an okay pay-per-view. Yeah, it was okay pay-per-view. It's funny looking at these pay-per-views, you think of how many people like attached away, like half, like at least half of 60-70% of this pay-per-view is gone, and so many legends that we had that it is gone, and the psychology of those days is just so different. Matches ending randomly, with everybody's finishes, but I give it a B minus. It wasn't the worst SummerSlam, but it wasn't the best.
Alfred, your grade.
I'm gonna give this. Are we doing ABC or 1 through 10?
A, B, C, D, or F?
I'm going to give this a C plus. And I think that might even be pretty generous, because while this wasn't necessarily a bad show for a SummerSlam, it seemed like more of an exhibition. In that, like, the main event, you got this tag team match, and I do very vividly remember, even though I was like two, Elizabeth, like, stripping down. That was pretty cool. But this is a pay-per-view. The legacy pay-per-view is what, like a 30-second match where the Ultimate Warrior won the Intercontinental Championship? That was like the moment from the pay-per-view, which is great. It's a moment that's going to last forever that people aren't going to forget. But for SummerSlam, for big, arguably the third most important, if not the second most important pay-per-view in WWE prestige, you got to do better than just one 30-second moment as the most memorable, you know, part, with everything else pretty much being a throw.
Yeah. I'd say you know, and it's tainted because all of us are in our 30s and watch this, you know, as kids.
Right.
So it's always that retrospect type of tainted feel to it now. Because back then, you know, A plus, you know what I mean? But now watching this a few times and, you know, almost 30 years later, I'm like, eh, it's kind of like a C. It's kind of like a C pay-per-view, I'd say. I'd give it a C. Yeah, I think C. You know, I'd give it a C. I think the Ultimate Warrior Honky Tonk Man moment was, I mean, that's lasting. That was great. Mega Powers and Mega Bucks, you know, like Alfred said, you know, for it to be the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, that type of, you know, pay-per-view, I mean, that type of main event for pay-per-view, yeah. You know, it wasn't the best. All right, real quick, 89, the Brainbusters defeating the Hart Foundation it was a tag team match, and then you had Dusty Rhodes defeating the Honky Tonk Man. Two straight losses by Honky Tonk Man. Mr. Perfect defeating the Red Rooster. Rick Martel defeating Tito Santana. Actually, it was Rick Martel and Fabrice Russo brothers defeating Tito Santana and the Rockers. Ultimate Warrior defeating Rick Rude, winning once again the Intercontinental Championship. Dugan and Demolition defeating Andre in the Twin Towers. And then Greg Valentine defeating Hercules. Hercules just can't catch a break. DiBiase defeating Snuka by countout. And then Hogan and Beefcake defeating... Randy Savage and Zeus. Yeah. So, match made in heaven and a match made in hell.
I will give this one. Well, I would have gave 88 an A based off the number of Hall of Famers. I was sitting there counting, and I stopped at like 12 or 13 before we moved on to 89. Oh, so based it on the Hall of Famers, hindsight once again. But, yeah, I'll give this one a solid C.
Hmm.
Yeah. But then again, don't know, man. 1989, and you put Zeus in there with, you know, star power for movie stuff.
No
Hope
Barn, baby.
That's so... You do that now, and you're like, yeah, whatever. But at 1989, that's different. So
yeah, it's true.
C+. We'll go C+.
C+.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Alfred, what do you give it?
I'm going to keep it at a solid C, but I have to mention that I was and still am a huge fan of the movie No Holds Barred. I've seen it hundreds of times. I pretty much have it memorized. And I remember loving the fact that they were going to put Zeus in the main event. You know, I was so into that. And I always thought that I always call him Debo, but Tiny Lister, I thought he would have been much better off as a pro wrestler. And it's a shame that he didn't see that through and just kind of become a full-time member of WWE, because I really did very much enjoy that tag team match. But then for the same reasons I'm not too hot on the last year's pay-per-view, it just seemed like another exhibition.
Yeah, I just have three words to say to you, Mr. Kanawa.
Let it rip. Yeah, rip.
Yeah.
Evan, what do you get? What do you give the pay per view?
Y'all gonna laugh. I give this an A plus. You know why? Because it's a kid from Baltimore. Because this was the first invasion we got of the NWA. We had the Horsemen. As the Brainbusters, we had Dusty Daddy. And if I'm correct, we had the great Tony Schiavone. He announced this SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And I was, as a kid, I'm like, wait, why is the Horseman on WWF? Why is Tony Schiavone on WWF? Why is Dusty Rhodes? Only because the first actual invasion, there's only SummerSlam we had about four participants of the NWA, because, of course, we'll go to 1990, none of them was there anymore. If I'm right. That's the only reason why I give it an A, just for the sheer remembering it as a kid. It's like, wait, NWA is actually WWF. That's the only reason I give it an A. Other than that, the Peyton was okay. Zeus was a big monster. People was just scared of him. We all know the movie sucked. He did a promo. And Hogan just like being in tag matches at SummerSlam for some reason. But,
yeah. All right, real quick, let's zoom over to I think I was C plus, a little bit better than the other one. All right, let's zoom through the next couple for the next 2 minutes. All right, so 90 real quick. We had Power and Glory defeating the Rockers, Texas Tornado defeating Mr. Perfect, Sherry defeating Sapphire, Warlord defeating Tito, Hard Foundation defeating Demolition, Jake defeating Bat News Brown, Nikolai Golkoff and Duggan defeating Orient Express, Randy Savage defeating Dusty Rhodes and Hogan and defeating Earthquake, Ultimate Warrior defeating Rick Rude in the steel cage match. That's really good. All right, real quick, Ryan, what do you get it?
Gotta stick with my C, middle of the road. Could be worse, but
Alfred.
I'm gonna go B. I enjoyed
Evan.
C plus.
I like this much better, actually. I'll give this a B minus. I think that cage match was really good. Yeah. 91. Let's get to 91 real quick. We got the British Bulldog and Steamboat and Texas Tornado defeating Power and Glory and the Warlord and then Bret Hart defeating Perfect for the Intercontinental Championship fantastic match. Natural Disasters defeating the Bushwhackers. Virgil defeating Ted DiBiase. Boss Man defeating the Mountie. Legion of Doom defeating the Nasty Boys, winning the Tag Team Championships in a street fight. Shyster defeating Valentine. Then Hogan the Warrior defeating Colonel Mustafa, General Adnan, and Sergeant Slaughter. Ryan, what's your grade for this one?
The classic good versus evil all down the card.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Evan.
Hey.
And yeah. Alfred.
I'm going to go B plus.
I agree. I'll keep it a B because I wasn't a big fan of the Adnan addition and then, yeah, you know, the iron cheek being in there. Yeah, that was a bit. And just a handicap match. All right, real quick, 92, ladies and gentlemen, SummerSlam 92. We had Legion of Doom defeating Money Inc. Nails defeating Virgil. Michaels, a double Exponential Disasters defeating the Beverly Brothers. And then we had Crush defeating the Repo Man. Ultimate Warrior defeating Savage by countout. The Undertaker defeating Kamala and by DQ. Tatanka. That wasn't part of the match. The card. It was a part of the card, but it wasn't part of the pay-per-view. It was a dark match. And then British Bulldog defeating Bret Hart. Wembley Stadium, ladies and gentlemen. What do you give Wembley Stadium, Alfred?
I give it an A-. Excellent pay-per-view and one of the greatest main events ever.
Very good. Evan.
Yeah, I'd give it a B plus.
Good
take the B.
Absolutely, Ryan.
Oh, definitely an A. When you did Intercontinental Championship in the main event, can't do that today.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
You could.
I give it an A as well. Wembley Stadium, amazing crowd, Intercontinental Championship main event. Just absolutely fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been so fantastic. I appreciate just the panel today. I appreciate Keith Lee on the show. Fantastic interview. Appreciate my boy Ryan making his return after being a husband and a father now. Fantastic stuff. Evan, always fantastic host and always glad to have you back on the show. Alfred. Hope to have you soon. It's been a blast. We have like 10 seconds left, so real quick, let everybody know your Twitter handles. We'll start with Alfred.
Follow me on Twitter at This Is Nasty.
And then we got 5 seconds left. Thank you so much. God bless you all. Have a good night and goodbye. We'll be right back.